good drone, Tweaky, and place me on the table where I can get a good look at the captain while you get him some liquid refreshment.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't need any liquid refreshment.
Of course you do. You're extremely dehydrated from your ordeal, Buck. If I may call you Buck. Now run along, Tweaky, and get Captain Rogers his drink. Well, now. What an attractive man you are, Captain Buck Rogers.
Now look. I've been waiting 24 hours to find out where I am, who I am, who you are. Can I have some answers?
Certainly, Buck. That's why I'm here, to answer your questions.
Great. Let's have it.
Well, you're Captain Buck Rogers, and according to your ship's log, you left Earth in 1987.
That much I know. Tell me what I don't know.
Well, if preliminary data holds up, it appears you have returned to Earth 504 years later. You are now in the 25th century. Buck, are you all right, Buck? Did you hear me? Buck?
I think I will have that drink now.
The Chaim.
Hello there, and welcome to Random Access Television. My name is Zach, and each episode of this podcast, my co-host Nas and I watch, review, and give you some history about a TV show from the past, picked for us by our supercomputer, which for today only, I'm going to call it Dr. Theopolis. This time, it's the disco-era sci-fi series Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
Okay, well, before we jump into the show talk, I just want to start at just say thank you so much, everybody. I've been getting amazing comments and reviews and things like that from all my friends and fam and randoms out there. So thank you so much for weighing in on our weird little project here. And if you want to leave a review on Spotify or Apple or whatever podcast service you use, that would be super cool. So anyway, there's my spiel.
Yes, please do that. Even give us a 5-star review, even if you're telling us that you hate us, because it'll help us get more viewers.
Exactly. It all works out for everyone.
you get to vent your spleen, and we get more listeners.
Totally. But yeah, as far as Buck Rogers goes, so I was, of course, because I grew up in the weird little Xennial generation, I had seen the Bugs Bunny Duck Rogers in the 24th and a half century, the little like Looney Tunes cartoon thing. But the comics, the show, all new to me. So
yeah, we'll get to it later in the history segment. But yeah, it was kind of a very popular thing for a long time and then suddenly wasn't. And so
that's so strange. It's I think especially the 70s and 80s, like this again, this like time period, late 70s, early 80s, the fad thing was definitely very, very, very prominent in media, in entertainment, where something will be the it thing for teenagers, young adults, and then, you know, next month, boom, nothing.
Yeah.
Flatter than a pancake.
Pet Rocks this week, and then next week it's all Hula Hoops. And
exactly.
You know, or 20 years before.
Yeah.
All
right. What are the little Sea Monkeys?
Sea Monkeys, yeah. Mood Rings.
Mood Rings.
Yeah. Cabbage Patch Dolls.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, see, this was the early days of fads. But yeah, this was a very, very, very discotastic late 70s space romp.
Yeah. All right, so a little bit of history here. Before we get to the TV show, Buck Rogers himself, the character, the franchise. Buck was created by author Philip Francis Nolan in a novella called Armageddon 2419 AD. I suppose I could have read that better. Published in 1928 in the pulp magazine Amazing Stories. Less than a year later, the character took the first of his many steps into a different medium when the daily newspaper strip started. It was a smash hit, and it spawned kind of a mini-craze in newspaper comic strips. At its peak, it was in over 400 daily newspapers around the world. This led to Buck Rogers, basically, he was the Batman of the late 20s, early 30s. He was on radio and theatrical serial films, all before Batman or Superman had ever even been thought of. So before the version we watched, there was actually another Buck Rogers TV show. It ran on ABC during the 1950-1951 TV season. For 36 live episodes.
Oh my God.
Because it was filmed live, though, it was basically lost. There's one episode remaining, although honestly, it doesn't sound great. It had a tiny budget, and there was behind-the-scenes turbulence. It was three different actors that played Buck Rogers himself in less than 6 months.
Okay.
So we'll get more into the history of the show we watch later, but with the real basics here, it was called Buck Rogers in the 25th Century. It started airing on NBC September 20th, 1979. Lasted two seasons and 37 episodes, ending in April of 1981. Starred Gil Gerard in the title role, along with Aaron Gray as the heroic Colonel Wilma Deering, and Pamela Hensley as the evil Princess Ardala, and Mel Blanc as the voice of the robot sidekick Tweaky. We'll have a lot to say about Tweaky, I bet.
Yes, we will. All right. Well, the way that they set up the two episodes that we watched is you could easily have watched them all in one sitting. It was like a movie, basically.
Not to get too much ahead, but it was.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. It was very, I would say, very generously budgeted for a typical TV show. There were sets. There were backgrounds. There were lots of costume changes, like very, very, very well-crafted show. I mean, honestly, it clearly took inspiration from Star Wars, which I'm not a huge Star Wars guy. And you could definitely see the inspiration from some of the ships and space backgrounds. I mean,
the bad guy's ship look like just like a Star Destroyer.
Exactly. And there was definitely some X-Wing moment type things.
I'm going to show my total nerd cred here, but it looked like a Star Destroyer mixed with a Cardassian warship because it had a kind of pointy like semicircle up front.
Yes. Well, see, Star Trek is definitely more my thing, but we can get into that later. But
you know, normally we do two episodes here. I think I'm going to break the formula a little bit. So normally we do two episodes. They basically were one. And I'll give a little bit more of the history of the show itself. It wasn't really two episodes, but it was in fact a TV movie and a theatrical movie that served as the pilot of the series.
Oh.
So this was the same way the series creator Glenn A. Larson did just 1 year before, or 2 years before this. With his other Star Wars inspired, I'm using air quotes here, series Battlestar Galactica. For that one, there was a pilot movie that he made because they used to do pilot movies for dramas back in the day. And then if the movie was successful, then they'd make a series the next year. He did that for Battlestar Galactica and they released it in theaters, mostly internationally, but a little bit in America. And it was a pretty big hit. Mm. So when it came to doing Buck Rogers, he, NBC and Universal Pictures did the same thing, except they released it in U.S. theaters as well. It was actually the number 23 movie of 1979.
Oh, wow. That was a big year for movies. So
yeah, it was right between some romantic comedy I can't remember and Monty Python and the Meaning of Life.
Definitely. Yeah. Wow. Okay. That puts it a little bit more into context for sure. So that's the thing. There wasn't necessarily a first episode and a second episode. Mm-hmm. It was just 2 hours of Buck Rogers.
Right.
And yeah, it's a very James Bond sci-fi swashbuckling hero story where I don't even know why. It's just very 70s.
Yes, it was. Although not quite as 70s as I had feared, because I've watched some other sci-fi from that era, and it's so, I mean, they had the feathered hair a little
the
bit.
The dance number, Zach. Oh, the dance number was painfully 70s. They were kind of recreating this space disco where they held little orbs and danced with them. Yeah.
Yeah, and it also has some of the best dialogue, I think, in the whole thing. When I was pulling clips from this, it is a sci-fi movie. And if you look at most sci-fi movies, 90% of the dialogue is either expository or jokes.
Yep.
This is actually one of the few scenes where there's some character moments, so I'm going to go ahead and play a clip from the dance sequence so you can get kind of a hint of how this show kind of worked.
I don't think I'm too up on these latest dance steps.
Well, if you have a preference, it is my party.
Terrific. How about something old-fashioned, huh? Sir, excuse me. Are you familiar with rock? You know, try it. Come on. No, that's not it. Just let yourself go. Let it go. Go with the music. That's it, right? Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
What are you doing?
It's called getting down. It's a little before your time if it frightens you.
Nothing frightens me.
All right, fine. Get down and boogie.
It's expressive.
It's disgusting. What happens if we bump together?
We automatically become man and wife.
Groovy. Get down.
I got to get to a little bit of the plot. The basic plot is Buck Rogers, as you heard in the intro, I played the Lime clip, which also explains that he's been lost for 500 years.
And there are still Jews. Yes.
Robot Jews.
Robot Jews.
So, yeah. Okay. None of this is going to make sense if you haven't seen it. So I'm going to give a little recap here. So Buck Rogers is an astronaut from the far off year of 1997, I believe. He gets frozen and then dethawed 500 years into our future. He gets dethawed by the bad guys, who are this space empire full of vaguely Asian-looking people.
I think they're space Nazis. I think that's what the point was. They were space Nazis and space Mongolians.
Yes, that they definitely had kind of a Genghis Khan kind of look to all their, and not just the actors weren't Asian, but their costumes generally were. They
right.
kind of look like Genghis Khan Mongol.
There was definitely some hardcore like exotic. Orientalism going on, which I'll talk about in a bit, but keep going with
they look like 1920s villains,
totally.
Film villains, which given when the comic was created
makes sense.
So anyways, he's sent down to Earth has had a catastrophe. They have had a holocaust, as they keep saying repeatedly, and long story short, there's a robot sidekick named Tweaky who carries around a robot psychiatrist around his neck. They're kind of the R2-D2 C-3PO of the group. And they're also not in the original comics, so they're clearly Star Wars, quote-unquote, air quote, inspired.
Absolutely.
And eventually, of course, the bad guys are revealed to be bad guys, and Buck destroys them.
Yeah, there's some back and forth of, like, some like at one point he's trying to tell the beautiful like captain who he's trying to sort of impress but not impress too much. He's like, have you ever heard of the beware of Greeks bearing gifts? And she's like, what's a Greek?
Yeah.
But
it's just like somehow in 500 years, everything disappeared. She doesn't know that, and even though she lives on Earth, but the space princess, who's not even human, knew what the United States was. So I don't know. There's no nothing. There's no world. All of the world lives in New Chicago. And this little airlocked Logan's Run-esque kind of city. And there's like a sequence where they leave. The only really cheap sequence, actually. There's a sequence where they leave the thing and there's like these mutants outside.
I actually really loved that part because he went into this weird little like cemetery. And it's like, he found his parents' graves. I don't know how he did that so quickly because I'm in cemeteries looking for people and looking for landmarks all the time. It takes a gajillion years to find what you want to look for. And exactly. Yeah. He was like, I want to know what happens to my parents.
This was a fun adventure and everything, but it kind of frustrated me several times because it brings up stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or at one point, there's kind of a don't trust the computers kind of Luddite kind of thing.
Right.
They bring up all these like sci-fi stuff that for a show like Star Trek or even like a Star Wars spinoff, you'd expect to become like the thrust of the thing, but nope, they just skip on to the next scene and never mention them again.
No, that's a really good point. Actually, I was looking, I was very curious to see if there were any scholarly articles written about the contextualization of like Cold War stuff, of how this, how Buck Rogers sort of shifted, I think, in the 20s. It definitely went through a lot of phases of where the villains could be some sort of international enemy. That was, whether it be Russians, whether it be Nazis, it definitely went through all these iterations. So I was very curious to see if there were any essays on this. And there, as usual with TV shows, there are not. There's very little written about the 70s Buck Rogers and sort of the socio-political implications.
Yeah, the only thing I was really able to find was basically just, I don't know, comic book convention stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just treated like any other sci-fi show.
Yeah.
Were we able to find anything about Buck Rogers, the character, the serials or the strips or anything?
Definitely able to find a lot more on the comic. You know, I didn't have time really to dig into some of the older things. However, not as much as you would expect. I would have assumed for something, there's so much written about even the Jewish history of Batman and a lot of the, you know, the comics of the time. I thought for sure there would be more history about this. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I just couldn't find it online.
Well, you know, I'm a huge comic book fan. But before I got into the TV thing, that was kind of my thing. And the pulps, the things that came before comic books that this came from, you know, and characters like The Shadow and Tarzan and Phantom and things like that, they were the superheroes before comic book superheroes, but they're basically forgotten. It's just kind of a cultural memory hole. Like basically once the people that listened to the radio serials in the 30s died, they just disappeared into the memory hole, except for occasional. And they try to bring them back periodically. If you remember in the early 90s, they had Phantom and Tarzan and
there's the Shadow movies. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
But they all bombed because for whatever reason that it just doesn't work with the zeitgeist anymore. Or Batman and Superman and all those other characters, they're just about as old, but they're still relevant and somehow the Phantom isn't.
Yeah, it's very strange because I definitely love that noir-esque quality that a lot of these pulp, you know, these pulp series have. I'm not super intimately familiar with a lot of them, but from what I've heard, you know, they have that very interesting early like 20th century kind of, yeah, just zeitgeist of the time, like very oh gosh, not even patriotic, but just very American. Very American.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In kind of a Horace Greeley, Go West, Young Lad kind of space exploration thing. There's no subtlety to them.
Nope.
There's no, I mean, there was thought given to them, but they were just adventure stories. They were basically take the genres that we knew, like pirate movies and things like that, put them in space.
Totally.
John Carter of Mars. There's another example of one that also they tried to bring back and it bombed.
Right.
Because it just doesn't work with modern audiences for whatever reason. So as for the show itself, so it was a little bit goofier than I was expecting. I'd heard about Tweaky and Mystery Science Theater when a robot would show up would occasionally go beady, beady, beady.
Got it.
As you've heard in these clips here. And I knew that they had complaints about Tweaky, but I still wasn't expecting him to be quite that silly because I wasn't expecting Mel Blanc's voice to come out of it.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, that's Porky Pig, right?
And Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and Elmer Fudd. He does all the voices.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so here's the thing about Tweaky. For one thing, his name is Tweaky, which, of course, if you're a 90s kid, you have probably a certain connotation with that. The second thing is he looks like a giant silver penis.
I was thinking he kind of looked like a silver, like a Hummel doll come to life.
Yeah.
He had he looked more like a, you know, those elaborate Swiss clocks with the little kids inside that'll come out and like
bang, a Glockenspiel? You know, clock?
Maybe. I don't know that. I've heard that word, but you saw them in old cartoons all the time. Where the little kids would come out and like bang the bell with a fake hammer.
Right, they're like those cuckoo clocks, but they're more elaborate.
Yeah, he also looked a little bit like the kid from the one from Spaceballs, the girl robot.
Yeah. I haven't watched Spaceballs in decades. Yeah, that's true. He does a little. Well, yeah. I mean, that's it. He's a joke. He's a canon. There's a bunch of stupid little robots that look like that.
He was just more prominent than I thought. And also that little psychiatrist robot, I could listen to his voice all day. He was just so calming. And I think he had a thing for Buck Rogers.
There was definitely there again, as is with old media, there was some queer coding there for sure. Mm-hmm. What I love about it is Tweaky. I'm gonna have to call him Tweaky and not call him Tweak because I keep thinking of the South Park character.
Right.
But so So Tweaky is wearing the psychiatrist around his neck, like how Flava Flav does with the with the clock. And it's like, what? Who came up with this? I mean, Flava Flav is rad, and he did his thing, and that's great. But yeah, Dr. Theopolis is is around his neck, and he has this very, very like 2001 Space Odyssey. Like, we can't do that, Dave. I'm sorry. Like.
You guys would have heard him. He's the main voice in the opening clip that we played.
Right, right. Like, very, like, even keel. And he's like, we put our rationality before our emotions. I'm sorry, Buck. I can't do that. But yeah, anyway, there was definitely some queer coding there. Definitely, for sure. However, Tweaky was hot for the princess. Who?
Yes.
Yeah, the princess was hot. What? Yeah, she was gorgeous.
I mean, and she was, I get the feeling that if this wasn't a TV movie, that there would have been some nudity in it. There was some hint of that nudity.
Oh,
it was the 70s. Everything had nudity in it. This show was surprisingly... I mean, she was not wearing very much at all.
She was not wearing very much clothing. And yes, it was the 70s. It was extremely 70s. And it was really funny because, like, at one point they made a joke about, like, how she had, like, the nicest rack in the room. Not in those words exactly. But, I mean, she had, like, no chest.
It's actually my favorite joke. Let's go ahead and play that clip. This is at the very end. So, spoiler alert, the good guys win. They blow up the bad guy's ship. But in, you know, Dr. Claw style, the bad guys get away to come back for next time. I don't know if they did or not because I haven't watched the rest of the series.
Never
but...
know.
We owe you a great deal more than apology, Buck. Especially me. I confess I thought the princess had you beguiled.
Well, I will say she had the nicest set of horns at the ball.
Yes, it was an attractive hat.
Tweaky!
Beedy, 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 beedy.
Uh-oh. Eyes forward. You'll get starsick.
Beedy, 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 beedy. But you're my kind of guy.
Right, right. Very 70s, just very 70s humor. Very, it's that fine balance between, I think a lot of media was grappling with what to do with feminism. Is the woman in charge? Is she an equal? Is she better? Is she still under men? Like,
because that was the thing here. The two women in this were actually very powerful.
Totally.
They were the commander of the Earth forces and effectively, although she was a princess, the commander of the bad guys.
Right.
And yet they were both sexualized, and in both cases, Buck ends up being better than them at everything.
Exactly. So it was that, but it was very, very, very typical of media at the time. I think I'm reminded a lot of even like very shoot from the hip, like Rockford Files type character with Buck. But the women weren't exactly nothing. They weren't exactly not powerful. So it was just, I think the media was just grappling with the concepts.
Yeah, it's kind of a real mixed bag.
Totally, totally.
But also tonally, the whole thing was kind of mixed. It really veered between, oh, I'm sad about my parents, to here's Tweaky making a joke, to here's a dance sequence, to the bad guy. It was just tonally kind of all over the map, which makes me very curious for the series itself.
From what I've heard, it does not maintain the quality. I haven't watched it any further. I don't know. I'm actually kind of curious. I really enjoyed this in a lot of places. And I love 70s kitsch, 80s, like early 80s kitsch. And it seems like the prevailing theme is that a lot of people watched it when they were kids and they were horny for the captain. Not the princess.
The but not the one who's walking around naked all the time. But yeah, the other one.
The other one.
Aaron, Wilma, which is oddly unsexual name, but might have been better in 1928. I don't know.
Who knows? But yeah, a lot of guys are like, oh yeah, this was like my first like, you know, experience with
Erin Gray was her name, and I've heard a lot about her
definitely
throughout the years. She later on was also in a similar role, I think, not a similar role, around the same time, shortly after this, she was on Silver Spoons. So if you were a kid, you know, you turned like 8 years old in 1979, you watched this and then Silver Spoons afterwards, you were just getting Erin Gray left and right.
Yeah, exactly. And hey, she was great.
Yeah. Yeah, there were really no bad performances in this.
I didn't think so. I mean, you know, I'd say probably the one thing that I personally don't think aged very well is what I mentioned before was sort of that like techno-orientalism, where they were kind of like the princess's like guard was kind of this yellow face.
Yeah, mishmash. Tiger.
Yeah. And you know, that stuff doesn't hold up. It's offensive.
It wasn't as bad as I was fearing, when it started. Just to put it, you know, and I suspect, like, if they had made, I suspect if we watched the 1950 TV show or the old serials, they probably would have just been, you know, flat out illegal to show anymore.
Right. But I saw I was looking at a couple of the comic strips like from the old, and yeah, they were straight up racist. I mean,
skin colored yellow in the comic
strips. With the, you know, the glasses and the hat and the teeth. And it was extremely offensive. And like I said, I mean, and it's not like this. I mean, it was very, very similar to the James Bond movie that I'm forgetting right now that also takes place in Japan.
The one where where Sean Connery pretends to be Japanese.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was very, very similar, ideologically similar.
Right. Colonial Orientalism. Exactly. Which is kind of fetishizing them.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was also really big in the 70s. I mean, if we're talking about sci-fi, low sci-fi culture, which is what really all sci-fi was in the late 70s, it was very similar to, you know, Marvel Comics was doing Iron Fist and Master of Kung Fu, Bruce Lee imitators everywhere.
I mean, I think this would have been when Everybody Was Kung Fu Fighting song was on the radio, 79.
Yeah, maybe. Within a year or two.
So yeah, very much the Asian fetishization was a very prominent aspect of 70s media culture. You know, which I think, as we can see, whoever's listening now in the world, we're dealing with hardcore Asian hate crimes and things like that in the world right now. And I think we can kind of see, you know, where some of the foundational principles of these cliches got started. So,
We grew up in California that had exclusion laws, so, you know, and the internment ship. So nothing new under the sun.
Absolutely not.
All right. So to get to the little bit of history here about the end of the show and what happened afterwards. So spoiler for the reviews, which we do in our next segment. I like this enough that I think I'm going to watch more of it, which is the first show I've said about any of this. Mm-hmm. But I'm a bit hesitant. We've talked before about how the quality doesn't necessarily hold up. And in reading about the show, there was a lot of behind the scenes squabbling. It happened very early, very often. Producer Glenn Larson, star Gil Durard, and the network were constantly arguing about the tone, how much sexiness on the show, whether it was going to be goofy or serious. It's hard to tell which side wanted what, for the most part. But as the show went on, it got less sexy and goofier. I think it's really telling that one of the main screenshots that was floating around for the series, it involved Tweaky standing by Gary Coleman.
Oh, God.
Like, Gary Coleman guest stars on the show. And this was a big network promotion because he was NBC's probably their top star at the time this show aired during. This is like the peak of Different Strokes. And also when NBC almost went out of business because they were awful. But that's a different story. Back to the series. So the acrimony got so bad that writers were quitting because Gil Gerard wanted the show to be more serious. And so he, even if they made a quip, sometimes he would just refuse to say it if he thought the line was too silly or made him look silly.
Well, good for him.
He didn't want the show to continue, but it did, barely. So it got actually a new premise, because that's what they like to do for shows back then. Instead of him sitting around Earth with that supporting cast, you know, defending the planet Earth and trying to find out what happened to Earth, he's out in space, along with the only recurring characters are Tweaky and Aaron Gray.
Okay.
They come with him, trying to find the quote unquote lost tribes of humanity that disappeared after the Holocaust, which is exactly the same plot as Battlestar Galactica from 2 years earlier.
Yeah. You can definitely, that's interesting because they went very Holocaust media with it, more or less.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting.
They even actually started reusing special effects from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, wow.
Because Battlestar Galactica was off the air at the time. It was only canceled after one season. So maybe because of the changes, it was also an actor's strike. Star Wars Mania was also kind of wearing off. It was kind of a fad. The ratings went down and the show was just unceremoniously canceled and off to rerun heaven. It shows Saturday nights on MeTV as of the recording of this. So as for Buck Rogers, the character, that was basically the last time he was seen. There were some comic books in the 90s, but they didn't do well. There was some talk of adapting movies hopping on. There was some bunch of movies that had been announced but never materialized. Although, apparently, in October of last year, a TV series was announced that may or may not star George Clooney. He's producing it, so by star, I suspect he'll just be a supporting character and they'll let some 30-year-old British guy affecting an American accent take over.
I am concerned for that. I will not weigh in until I know more, but I am concerned. I imagine that the Asian fetishization will continue if George Clooney is at the head.
Maybe, but yeah, I suspect it'll bomb just the same way as John Carter did and Phantom did. Yep. And it's just something about those 20s, 30s heroes appeals to the nostalgia in certain people and them alone.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. It's true. I really liked this. I thought it was a very solid B+, maybe A- in places, but a solid B+.
Same here. It's probably the best Star Wars ripoff of the late 70s I've seen.
Absolutely.
Definitely better than Battlestar Galactica or something like Ice Pirates or something. Sorry to, I know sci-fi fans, if you're listening to this,
you're probably really disappointed.
We all got opinions. Enough to watch the series. You know, it's on Tubi, which doesn't have too many ads, so I might check it out. The most 70s possible thing, and this probably leads to the future productions of the guy Glenn Larson who produced it. Mm-hmm. It ends with a freeze frame, which is just them laughing. Yeah. He went later on to kind of become the king, well, the co-king of like 80s adventure shows. So he did this. He did Quincy. He did the Hardy Boys.
Oh, wow.
He did BJ and the Bear. Okay. And then in the 80s, he did The Fall Guy, Magnum PI, and Knight Rider.
Oh, excellent. Okay, well, those are all things I really like.
Yes, and they all kind of have that same light, fun.
Totally.
Yeah,
swashbuckling.
Turn off your brain.
Yeah. They're super cute. And yeah, there's some problematic stuff in them for sure, as was most media at the time, but they're usually a good watch.
Yeah, they're just fun. All right, so now it's time to fire up our supercomputer, Dr. Theopolis, see what he has for us in charge. Hit that random button. Okay, it's our first game show.
Ooh.
From 1998, it aired on VH1. It is titled My Generation, the musical game show about generation versus generation, I guess, just based on the title and the VH1.
Is this about song lyrics? Is it going to
be about song lyrics? I don't know. I literally know the name and the fact where it aired. That's all I got.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
But there's two full episodes on YouTube. It's in our Random Access Television playlist, where you can see all, not only those, but every episode of that's on YouTube.
That's on YouTube.
All right. I'll say this again. So there's two episodes available on YouTube. It's in our Random Access Television playlist. There's a link in the description here where you can see not only the two episodes of My Generation, but also about half the other shows we watch that have episodes available on YouTube. They're all there, including some previews, if you are so inclined. So do you got anything else to say, Nos, about this little 70s event?
Just party on, everybody. It was very discotacular.
It definitely is. All right. Ta-ta for now. We'll see you in a fortnight.
Bye. Thanks for tuning into this episode of Random Access Television. And if you haven't already, please remember to subscribe to us on Apple and Spotify podcasts. We also love to read reviews, so go ahead and leave us one. You can find us at RATVPod, that's RATVPOD, at twitter.com. And if you have questions, complaints, compliments, recipes, email us at RATVPod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Bye-bye.